You ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder podcast and YouTube channel. This week, I'm talking to two great guests, Alex and Healy. One of their public sites that we'll talk about is Finn versus Finn. It's an affiliate site, but it's a different take on an affiliate site. They don't monetize with display ads. They don't monetize with Amazon or anything like that. They go direct to brands. They also have leveraged their relationships with affiliate programs, so affiliate managers. And rather than just, you know, sign up for somewhere like Share a Sale or something like that, they actually try and develop a deeper relationship with these affiliate managers, which means that they can leverage better payout commissions and better deals all around. We also talk a little bit about some of the tactics they've used to grow Finn versus Finn, especially around the way that they create their content. And then finally, we finish up with an interesting opportunity that they have for other people who are interested in building sites such as Finn versus Finn. So let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Hey, Alex and Healy, how are you both?
Great.
Good. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank
Thanks for jumping on the show with us. Yeah, how's the weather over? You guys are based over in California, right?
California. Yep. It's clear and sunny, little cool, but not bad for February, I'd say.
Is it always sunny there? I just imagine that it's always sunny in California. Maybe it's because I've watched too many films. I don't know.
It's either sunny or on fire these days. Those are the two modes.
Oh God, yeah, those fires. Yeah, is that all done now? Is that all finished?
For now, I'm sure it'll start up again probably in 4 or 5 months. So it's. Seems like a worrying trend, unfortunately.
Yeah. Good space for an affiliate marketer to insert themselves and try and save the day there.
Get into.
Yeah. In the middle of the fire season last year, we contemplated trying to find a firefighter or someone to start an affiliate site for us to try to come up with air filters and other gear that people would need, because it was pretty crazy.
There's such a thing as private firefighters out there, right? I'm sure I read in the news that people were celebrities were hiring private firefighters to guard their home, essentially.
So there's cost benefit analysis there. You know, if your home is worth enough, it might be worth it. Yeah, but for us, no, not so much. We got to rely on the public.
I'm gonna jump in the car and run if there's a fire coming. I'm not gonna try to fight it.
No. Well, thanks for being on. It'd be interesting to, before we kind of dive into like the marketing aspect of the interview, just to learn a little bit more about both of you, like your backgrounds, how you got started in kind of affiliate marketing, maybe even if you remember how you made your first dollar online.
You want to go first?
Sure, why not? So I started off my career in finance. I was actually a venture capitalist with a couple pretty big venture capital firms. And then when the financial crisis happened in the kind of mid-2000s, I uh, I realized I probably needed to learn how to do something other than just moving money around. And I looked across all the companies we had invested in, and I found that there were a few roles that they were all hiring for. One of them was web engineer, which I cannot do. But another one was a data-driven marketer. And I thought, well, I like numbers and I like to write. Maybe that's a thing that I could do. And so I then joined a series of startups and helped them raise money, and also ran marketing and figured out how to do online marketing. And so I had some pretty big success there, particularly with one company in the solar space that went public. And while I was there, started spending a lot of money on affiliate marketing and realized that there's this whole world out there that's not the sort of traditional online marketing that you would do inside of a corporation or a startup, but there's this whole other world of entrepreneurs and small business owners who have their own businesses driving qualified traffic or leads to other companies. And actually, when I was at that solar company, we purchased one of the largest affiliate marketing companies in that space for, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And I got to know the founders of that company, and I was like, okay, well, these guys are probably smarter than I am. But on the other hand, I don't know that they're doing anything that's like so hard. And happened to join a company where Alex was also on the marketing team. We got to know each other pretty well. And kind of as we left that startup, I kept poking at Alex and saying, hey, I want to start this. I've got this website. I want to start a website with you. Let's start an affiliate marketing website. And I think I'll let Alex tell. I think he was a little skeptical at first, but when it started to work, I think his eyes were opened, and we've been off to the races ever since then with Finn versus Finn.
Yeah, I'm definitely skeptical at first. I didn't have the experience of the $10 million purchase of a affiliate site in my back pocket to kind of reference. So didn't sort of connect the dots at how affiliate marketing could be lucrative in the beginning. But super glad that Healy pushed me, and obviously we'll talk about kind of where that project, where Finn versus Finn is today. But just a bit on my background, I'm from Los Angeles. I moved to the Bay Area for college. And then because my opportunities in the Bay Area were all sort of tech focused, that's where I took my first internships and first jobs. Lived in California, in San Francisco for about 6 or 7 years, working in early stage tech companies, usually as marketing hire number one, which is also kind of where I met Healy as well, at a very, very early stage fintech company. And I think maybe the one thing he left out of that is just that the reason that's called Finn versus Finn is because we were working at a fintech company at the time, and we thought, well, we do SEO for fintech. We know there's opportunity here. We just left a fintech. Let's start there. I mean, that seems like a natural, close to home spot. But as we'll sort of tell here in the story, we quickly pivoted away from fintech and moved into direct to consumer wellness. And it's been a really awesome project to work on together.
That's awesome. Interestingly, that was literally my first question: is where did the name Finn versus Finn come from? So that's where it comes from.
Yep.
So Finn versus Finn was both of your first kind of foray, like on a personal level, into the affiliate marketing world. You didn't have any prior experience apart from obviously Healy with your day job. This was like the first time you looked at an affiliate site.
I will admit, I did have one failure before this. Healy and I used to joke a lot about Japanese whiskey and how it was becoming a huge kind of global commodity, and while the prices are skyrocketing, and I was a fan myself. So I thought, well, maybe there's an opportunity for SEO around this. I think the obvious looking back, hindsight's 2020, answer is, you know, it's really difficult to ship alcohol around the world. There's legal regulations, the margins are good, but there's potential breakage and all the rest. So yeah, it wasn't the best affiliate category, but I did spin up a site. I did write up content. I did try and make that work for a tiny bit. And then when you don't get traction, it's easy to quit. So that was just my only experience before Finn versus Finn.
Cool. I mean, it's a pretty home run then, if this was like your proper first go at it then, because the site's gone on to do amazing, right? Is it about two and a half years old now, the site? Maybe a little bit longer?
Just over 2 years old now, I guess, right? So we started basically the beginning of 2019, so 2019, 2020, and now we're at the beginning of 21. So that's right, yeah, exactly.
And do you guys mind sharing kind of top line revenue, how much the site's making and how that grew? Like, did it was it like the hockey stick growth, or like everyone talks about? Or
Well, so it did grow pretty fast, but you know, one thing we do want to touch on later in the interview is it's so we have sort of now a we'll call it kind of a franchise of sites where we have partnered with other entrepreneurs to fire up their own affiliate sites, and we'll talk about the we think we bring a particular expertise to the party, which is why people are interested in partnering with us. But you know, across that network, the sites are doing, you know, $50,000, $60,000 to $70,000 a month.
That's awesome
in revenue. And I don't know if hopefully Alex is okay with me sharing this, but you know, we have yet to start a site that hasn't done it or isn't doing over $10,000 a month of revenue, which I think is pretty awesome. Now we have bought some sites that we haven't been as successful with. It seems like we're better at starting from scratch than buying sites. And you know, we'll probably talk about some of the Google updates seem to penalize the sites that we buy, whereas they don't seem to penalize the sites that we build. So I'm sure there's some sort of a learning there. If I was able to sit pensively with a glass of Japanese whiskey, I could untangle what that was. But it's easier building than buying.
Yeah, it would be super interesting to delve into that, kind of what the difference is. I think obviously you're one of our clients and these website builder clients, so I've seen some of the sites that you've bought, and I think it's mainly to do with like Fin versus Fin is a whole nother level of quality, right? It's not your typical affiliate type of website. It's full of tables and data and, you know, deep delves into information, whereas most affiliate sites kind of just scratch the surface, right? They're very heavy best X for Y type, and the whole aim is not to educate, but to get someone to click through. Whereas Fin versus Fin, it's there to get someone to click through, but the primary purpose generally seems to educate. Is there for education.
I think that's accurate, and we take a lot of pride in that. So we have physicians and dentists, you know, people with credentials that review a lot of the content that we create to make sure it's medically accurate and things like that. So we want to take it very seriously. I think if I was to describe the approach we have to how we research these, and one of the reasons why we like working with your writer teams, because they seem to have a similar approach, is, you know, when we are inside of large companies and we want to make a big purchase of like a software or hardware or something, we put a lot of research into it. And you might even do what's called a request for proposal, where you ask the companies that you might work with to answer a very long form series of questions that, and you compile that data and you put together tables and then you present it to the CEO or your boss and you say, okay, we're going to spend $1 million on this product. Here are the top three vendors. Here's the pros and cons of the top three vendors. Here's the pricing. Here's the key features laid out in the table so that very quickly in a meeting, the CEO can look at it and point to a feature and ask you about it. And then you dive into the features and then you have a recommendation. So we take that sort of same approach of, okay, we're going to purchase something for $1 million inside a professional organization where we have to convince the CEO to do this. And we apply that to the stuff that we write about.
I was just going to add on there. I think, you know, one thing that gives us the confidence to do this, because it sounds kind of crazy, right? Like, why create an RFP for, you know, just a random product that doesn't cost $1 million? Well, I think it's because we tend to focus on very considered purchases. So they're consumer purchases, but it's not like a $5 thing for the most part. They're usually around health and wellness, which is a kind of a considered area. And then because these companies are growing really well and they have kind of great unit economics for the most part, or they just have a lot of cash that they're looking to burn on growth, one or the other, the payouts tend to be higher. And therefore, you know, we have sort of we've developed a little bit more confidence around how much time and energy and all that we should be putting into each article. So I definitely think it's a quality game over quantity is sort of our approach.
Yeah, for sure. I think when I looked in Ahrefs, the site's got like less than 150 posts on there, but it's doing insane numbers. So it's definitely quality over quantity, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, keeping on the track of Fin versus Fin, how do you guys decide what to write about? Because again, it's totally different to like the normal affiliate site where it's best X or Y, or it's full of long tail kind of trying to just siphon traffic from Google. It's more versus product, brand A versus brand B or brand reviews. How did you decide what to review?
So I think being in Silicon Valley has some pretty serious advantages. And the world that I play in and that I know Alex plays on, I know kind of on the marketing side, is we interact with a lot of VCs and marketers who are starting companies. So we are actually pretty plugged into the, hey, what companies are getting invested in Silicon Valley and who's starting new companies and what trends are taking off. And so I think that's the place where we get our ideas, is we just try to stay very close to where the money is flowing and which type of companies are doing really well. That gives us some pretty serious advantages. So for my day job, I advise startups and venture capital firms. And so I was approached by the one of the founders of one of the leading telemedicine companies in the United States is founding a new company. He approached me and I've been kind of chatting. He actually asked me to be a CMO, which is cool, but I'm kind of having fun with what I'm doing. So that's not what I want to do. But on the other hand, he shared a lot of statistics with me about the space that he wants to go after. And I don't think that there are very many people who have access to that type of information. So I'm not sure that's super I don't know that a random person can go and replicate that. But I do think that it's a weird thing to be passionate about, right? I just love these types of businesses and they're really fun, but that I'm sure there are analogies in other industries. If you are an expert at XYZ, you could probably go do this type of thing. And again, Alex and I did talk about starting a website around how to be prepared for a fire and during fire season, because California is really bad and it happened in Australia as well. And so to the extent you were a firefighter or a first responder or someone, you probably have superior information to the average Joe. And there are probably a lot of people on the internet who want to search for that type of thing, right? So there's no reason you, depending on whatever thing you're an expert in, there's no reason why you couldn't go and recreate something in a similar space.
Yeah. And I think, so I kind of touched on it before, but just make sure it's a considered purchase first. So I do think fire equipment is a fairly considered purchase, but if you think about like a medicine or, something that costs a lot of money, that's sort of big, that other people in your life maybe are using as well, that's a considered purchase. So when you start there and you have that, then that's sort of fertile for affiliate kind of product reviews and comparisons. That's sort of the first step. And so what Healy said about access and keeping our finger on the pulse of where investment dollars are going and kind of what the economics of different companies are is all very true. I want to say that you don't have to be kind of plugged into that world to necessarily see those trends. There's a couple proxies for them. One would be, you know, a Crunchbase.com or like any sort of site that talks about where the investment dollars are going. If you're hearing about it the day the money is invested, it's not too late. I mean, you're still very much on the early side of things. So you could follow that. I think also just, so that's just kind of all public information. The other thing is like, you know, hey, the real insight for me, at least from a user's perspective, was I see ads all the time on Facebook, on the subway, in newspapers, on TV about new brands. And I probably don't notice them the first few times, but then once a competitor comes into the realm, I'm like, wait, there's two of these companies, there's three of these companies. Like, how do they all compare? Like, what are the differences? I might not even be in the market for them. I'm just interested and curious. So I think that's where kind of this X versus Y versus Z comparison idea came from. And a lot of these companies are just spending boatloads of money on advertising. As two marketers ourselves, Healy and I, we know where companies put their marketing dollars. And so if they're already doing Facebook and Google, well, the next step is probably affiliate. And so it's just kind of a nice model where I think it's all very public information. It's just, you know, being smart about where you invest your time based on those signals.
So it's mainly not based on the traditional keyword research kind of method then, because it sounds like you're trying to get in early from these, you know, on these trends, whereas most SEO tools don't have historic data because the company wasn't around 6 months ago. Is that where you're coming from, the angle?
That's very true. In fact, I specifically remember a pretty awesome SEO guy kind of making fun of one of the articles we wrote. He's like, how many searches are there for that a month? Like 10? I mean, he's like, you dominate it, but what's the point? And now that article is making like $400 or $500 a month, right? So it's just trying to get ahead of the curve on these things. And I think there's a flip side, which is also, if you really do a nice review and you put a lot of thought into it and you're the first company to review a new product, you might get a link from that company. Like, that is actually, like, it's kind of hard to beat a review that has a link from the company. Like, that's pretty awesome, right? So there's an advantage to being first.
The other thing I'll say there that's just to kind of add on is that companies, if you're early on, they're very hungry in general for press. They're very hungry for partnerships. We've helped so many different startups just start their affiliate program from the ground up. They didn't have one before they started talking to us. And so you're positioned as a very unique partner in that realm once you do that. So it's just, it pays to be early, basically.
That's awesome. I came across a similar technique years ago, but definitely not as advanced as you guys. People were basically, there's a site, JVZoo, where people would launch like informational type products, informational content. And people would look what launches were coming up, and they would create landing pages around those. Mm-hmm. And they'd have no search traffic, but when it launched, people would then start searching for it, and these guys were at the top. But you guys are doing that on just a much bigger scale with real brands and real products and, you know, commercial products, rather than just, you know, someone who's writing a guide on how to do X, Y, Z or something. That's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's also important to remember that for us, our important client is the affiliate manager inside of that company. And we want to have relationships with them. And we talk with them on Zoom quite a bit and exchange a lot of emails with them. And that gives us sort of, we get some insider stuff from them too, in terms of features coming or new products coming. We can ask them for special discount codes. We can get images that aren't used anywhere else on the web of the products and things like that. So we can really, by really treating those people like with the importance that they deserve and really caring about like them, like they have a job that they're doing and they have a goals that they're trying to achieve. So if you can understand what they're trying to do and you can help them a lot and you can show that you care, they'll help you back. And then they move jobs. So they go to new companies and they ask you to write about them. Or they introduce you to their friend who's starting a new company or has a new role. So like that kind of network is actually pretty awesome. And they're smart marketers. They're fun people to get to know. So it's kind of neat. It's I guess, a perk, it's less work and more of a perk, I guess. Like, that's a cooler run.
I think we sometimes kind of forget that there's an actual person on the other end, right? When we send traffic to these companies, we sometimes forget that it's someone's job to manage these affiliates and it's their job to bring in this traffic. I just send traffic and it goes to the company and I don't think past the click, but it sounds like you guys are thinking past the click and it's paying off.
I think there's like three real customers. You know, there's a lot of affiliate marketers will think of Google as their customer, right? Like, I gotta please Google, gotta rank. That's a great place to start. Obviously you have nothing without that. So Google's for sure your customer. The user obviously is the customer, and that ties very much into ranking. If the user is just hitting your site and bouncing, it's going to affect your rankings, but it's affecting conversion. So those are where I think obviously we're worth focusing on to begin with. But then once you do have some traffic and you are able to create some direct relationships with brands, then for sure invest time in those relationships because they pay dividends in so many different ways. And they're the most fun. I would say it's the most fun aspect of affiliate marketing is, you know, working with actually other people and helping their business grow.
And are you actively reaching out to these people, or once you've created the content, are they reaching out to you? How does that relationship start?
Good question. Yeah, it happens in every which way imaginable. It can be us being, proactive. I'll give you kind of a range of how it works. So there's, at this point, we get a fair amount of inbound interest. We turn down a lot of categories, a lot of brands that we don't necessarily see as lucrative or worthwhile. Other times it's worthwhile, but we just sort of need to put it into a queue and prioritize it. Sometimes it's such a great opportunity. We're so thankful that they reached out. So it can be a wide range of inbound inquiries. On the outbound side, definitely we're, as we mentioned before, we're writing a lot of speculative keyword kind of plays. And so in that sense, we are writing the content without a partnership in place. And once we get traffic, once we're pretty sure we can provide some value to the brand, we will reach out. And in some cases, it's taken 6 months, a year, in order to get on their radar, in order, or if we're on their radar, in order for them to say yes. Some programs are extremely competitive. And so it's another reason why once you get in, you just want to make sure you're proving value, you're someone who they want to work with, you're offering up new ideas, and being creative about how you can help them grow. So not all are so hard. Some are really plug and play, and we have a more or less anonymous relationship with them. You apply through a network, you get in, you barely talk to the person at all. But the best ones are definitely, you know, a cold outreach via email or LinkedIn or something like that, finding the right person, trying to understand what their growth challenges are, and then see how your site can, you know, kind of plug in there.
We've also had some agencies that reach out to us as well. So agencies that do kind of manage affiliate or online marketing for brands, and they will come with sort of a portfolio of brands, and you can develop pretty strong relationship with them and kind of pick off the brands that you actually think you can do something with.
Yeah. Have you guys ever had any kind of pushback? Because obviously when you're doing like a versus post, typically one product is going to be better than others. Have you ever any backlash from the competitor you've said is not so great?
A little bit. It tends to happen in markets that are extremely competitive. So it's a little bit of a seesaw where it's like, on the one hand, there's some pushback. Like, hey, why aren't we being positioned as number one? Why are you just saying we're amongst the best? Why don't you say we are the best? But on the other hand, it's like, great, we kind of need to play ball with you because it's such a competitive space. We know that you're anything bad that they say to us or vice versa, the relationship is valuable to them as well, I should say. So it could tip the scale in the opposite direction. So it's a fine line. Definitely had very frank conversations with many, many partners about that. I think the way that we combat it is, we are just objective sort of shopper guides. We are shepherding the shoppers to the facts to help them make the right decisions that are for them. We are not in the business of picking favorites. And that's sort of the style of our content. I noticed that a lot of affiliates go the realm of personal opinion. You know, this is my favorite. I have tried it. It's more of the influencer strategy. But that's not really where we play. So we're more in like the, let's structure the data, let's put it in front of the consumers and let them make the decision for themselves.
Adam, I think the other thing is if there's a product we'd hate or we don't like, we generally just don't review it. So if someone purchases with something or like, oh, like we wouldn't want one of our friends or family members using that product, we pass. Yeah. Right. So we're not in the business of like ripping on products and saying really nasty things. If it's something that stinks, like we're probably just not going to touch it, you know? So there's a little bit of filtering of the stuff that we tend to review.
Okay. No, that's really interesting. Yeah. I think like you mentioned, lots of typical sites give their own spin, their own opinion, and they will definitely promote a product even if it's not so great, just because they're chasing the click. Right. But yeah. I like this approach. It's a good approach. So one thing which I think is unique about you guys, and you've touched upon it there, is how you lay out the content, like how you structure the content. And I wanted to ask, is that you mentioned the template at the beginning where in these companies you would go to the management with this outline. Is that a template? Is that called something that you could go and look at what that would typically be structured like?
I mean, yeah, you probably Google for RFP template. And you
can RFP template.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure you could probably find one. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I haven't really thought about that. It's just something we always did that like inside the company, they never really thought about actually like kind of creating a template around it. But yeah, it probably is. But it does look pretty similar to what a lot of our agents are. Right? Imagine that you've got to convince your CEO to spend $1 million on something that they're not really paying attention to.
Yeah.
Right. You've got to introduce what you're trying to do and why, and then lead them through the research so they know you're not just randomly like throwing darts. Right. And then you've got to lay out the features, and you've got to kind of lead them to where you want them to go.
But then also, and then, you know, transferring that idea to the affiliate world, also remembering that your reader isn't a CEO. They're just someone with a very short attention span. I mean, that's actually CEO like, but they're not considering their own business. They're just considering their complexion or their next contact lenses or something like that. So,
yeah. So on to the technical part of the content then. So the tables, they're obviously, they look really nice. How are you making those? Are they just HTML tables? Have you found a solution? Because tables are the bane of everyone's life, making them look nice on desktop and mobile. Have you come up with a solution to that?
I feel like we should probably just productize our solution because it's, everyone asks the same thing, you know. So thanks for saying that our tables look nice. Definitely a pain in the butt, that is true. The trick is that if you do a little bit of custom coding in the beginning, you can more or less create a template that you can very quickly plug and play, the images and sort of emojis and different fun things in there. Once you get the hang of that, I think it's just some heavy lifting on the front side to kind of figure out what the best practice, how it's going to look the best on all devices and on your site. And then once you crack that code or you get that blueprint, then you're off to the races and you can do it every time. Technically speaking, how we do it is each table is custom coded. But we have a sort of clever way of making it easy to swap in CSS, fairly easily. And then on mobile, this is a little bit of a unique hack, so to speak. I think the jury is still out on how well, if it can be optimized, I should say. But instead of using a HTML table on mobile, we actually just use an image of the table. And so that makes it so that you don't have to necessarily custom code responsive tables every time, or you don't have to worry about responsiveness breaking for some reason. It also has the added benefit of allowing us to rank fairly high in Google image search because we're having this like pretty cool table that it's really the crux of what everybody wants from this kind of content. And it's appearing in Google image searches. So that's an added benefit.
That's cool. Are you finding that, so how long have you been using the image, this image technique for? Because I always see that, like, especially lots of structured featured snippets around lists and tables, they tend to be pulled from the structured data from a table. And with Google moving to like mobile indexing first, I wonder how that would play into your ability to win featured snippets if you don't have the structured data on a mobile.
It's a great question, and it's something that I worried about a lot because I thought, oh man, we've cracked the code, like we're now doing it on image search, but oh no, like now we're moving to mobile indexing first. Probably, you know, what's going to happen? So we have moved to mobile indexing first. That's the reality, and it doesn't seem to have hit our snippets super hard. I think we have other strategies to win snippets in other places. The tables is a great one. I'm not actually, it's a great question. It's something we were worried about for a long time. I don't have a good answer in terms of why we haven't been hit. We probably should have been.
Okay. Well, and how do you decide what goes into the table? Because again, that's the fine balance between too much in there and, it looking like chunks of text and stuff and not enough where somebody can't make an informed decision. Do you have like a go-to checklist of this should go in a table and this shouldn't go in there, or how do you play that?
Not a go-to checklist per se. I think it really depends on the product. And a lot of this is just putting yourselves in the shoes of the shopper. So what are the 5 to 10, I'd say maybe 10 is an upper bound. You don't want to have too many rows on your table. What are the 5 to 10 questions that you personally have to know before you'd put money on this product? And when you break it down that way, I think it's pretty obvious. And then you can add a couple more if it's a little light or, sometimes the brands themselves will say, hey, this is a differentiating factor for us. Will you please include this? And, depending on whether or not we think that's important for the consumer or not, we'll consider that. So sometimes these things start one way and then expand, shrink, et cetera.
Outside is a really good point. It definitely makes sense if you have the relationship with the affiliate manager inside the organization to ask them how they differentiate. Right. So if you just, what makes you different than X or Y? And they will tell you that because they care about it and they probably spend all day thinking about it. Right. So putting that into the table. So that's less a, we're thinking about SEO and more, this is what the brands are saying is important. And they probably have more research and data than we do. So we should at least pay somewhat attention to what they're talking about.
Cool. And do you use any schema markup or anything on the pages to tell Google that there's structured data there?
I'm constantly saying more schema. I'm like, what about this? What about this?
Yeah.
But I don't know if it works, any of it. So I don't know, Alex, you should take this question.
Yeah, we are definitely still in that phase of wondering if it's working or helping us on any level, but very interested in and in definitely exploring different schema. We have a review schema, we have breadcrumb schema, we have a search box schema, logo schema, all the standard basic stuff. I haven't noticed any sort of star ratings or like the nice little kind of added aesthetic element to the SERPs. Are some of the partners in our kind of portfolio of sites, they have. So I think it's a little bit hit or miss. We've structured them the same. They are the same schema, same, you know, with slightly different words, different ratings on the two sites. So it's a little bit random. I also notice in Google Search Console all the time that the same schema without any changes, sometimes will have errors, sometimes won't. So I just think it's a little bit of early days for Google figuring out how they want to value the schema. Overall, long term, I'm very bullish on schema. I think, you know, I'm in the camp of give Google as much data to structure, to understand and structure your site as possible. And you will be rewarded for that.
Yeah, going back maybe like 8 months ago or a little bit longer, like every affiliate site had review markup schema on there, and the front page for any kind of best X or Y type result was just full of star boxes. And then Google changed something and then they all disappeared, and some got to keep them and some didn't. So I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. Those lucky star ratings. It definitely worked. The click through rate is definitely improved. So
it's cool you're making use of that. I've been delving like deep into the rabbit hole of schema lately and testing all kinds of funky stuff, you know, like actually linking in the schema to, for example, you know, one of your products could be about hair loss, and actually linking through to in the schema, say this hair loss is the same as a link to the Wikipedia page. So Google matches the entities, so it knows that you're talking about exactly what you're talking about, and trying to mark up as much of that as possible. And then doing similar things on like the About Us page and the Contact Us page, marking up in there like actually where your citations are on the organization schema. So, you know, it's the same as this citation. So one, it helps Google to find them, but also it helps them to match the entities together. So there can be no, like, they know exactly that these two things are the same business. It's the same. Yeah, they're together. They're meant to be together. And same on the About Us page for any kind of social media profiles, marking those up in the schema. And just so good, there's no confusion that Google knows these are exactly your pages, your citations, your links. I mean, I'm testing at the moment. The jury's out. I don't even know if it's going to make any difference. It's been a ton of work to implement, but I don't even know if it works yet.
You just excited me there, so thanks for putting that caveat at the end. Let us know how it goes. Yeah. any other schemas that you're finding are working for you or any of your clients?
Just that at the moment. So we're just testing that. I mean, just the basic schema, like you mentioned about logos, organization, like recipe schema is a big one if you're in the food space. That in itself is a bit of a nightmare to get marked up correctly because there's so many different like nuances around nutrition and ingredients and serving and cost per serving, and you know, you have to have them all filled out. And in Search Console, you check, then there's plenty of, they're not errors, they're warnings, because you might have missed out, like, you know, a box, you know, a certain ingredient or something like that. But yeah, no, apart from that, but I'm bullish on schema too as well, Alex. I think it's going to be big.
I think you know, one thing that we're very interested in, but we're very unsure of how it's, you know, going to pay off from a schema perspective, would be thinking about how to build credibility by having kind of people with credentials review and be part of the authorship of your content, especially when it comes to health and wellness. Makes a lot of sense. And then using schema to, as you mentioned, just unequivocally tell Google who this person is, what their credentials are, why this is legit, why their word is, you know, worth trusting. So that's something that we're very interested in exploring. I guess my confidence level, given the number of errors in Google Search Console and the fact that I can't get my review stars to show up, is like, hey, this is something down the road. This isn't super important today, but absolutely worth getting ahead of.
Yeah, definitely. I think maybe adding like a person schema to the individual post with the author details in there, and you can mention in the schema links to their LinkedIn profile. You can mention like if they work for another company and they're just writing for you, you can mention what that company is, their job title there. Like you can mark all of that up in the schema, which, like you say, it just hands Google the data on a silver platter rather than them having to try and figure it out.
Yep. It's interesting, I'll have to say, on the one hand, Google seems to be trying to help webmasters not be so precise, you know, like, hey, just have a site that loads well, just have it, you know, be user-friendly, just write good content, don't worry about all the technical stuff. And then they introduce schema and they're like, great, but actually get really minute and granular with how you're constructing your site and giving us data. So it's a little bit of a mixed message there, but, you know, we'll see where it all lands.
I think they tell you something on one hand and then they expect you to do something on the other hand, basically.
it's pretty hard. I empathize with them because on the one hand, they would like just some random person who's an expert to be able to start a web page and have them do well, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, they love structured data. Like they love structured data. So,
yeah. That kind of brings me on to my next point is how you guys are handling the whole EAT thing, you know, the expertise and authority and trust. And you mentioned that you have these guest writers come in. How are you finding these relationships? How are you forging these partnerships and having them? Are they writing the content? Are they just reviewing it and happy to put their name and kind of credentials against this?
I mean, sometimes it's just through our network. So sometimes you'll know a dentist or something who's has a light loan and wants to, you know, but is interested in startups or something and wants to spend a few hours a week kind of reviewing your stuff and making sure it's all accurate. Other times it'll be, you know, colder outreach and trying to find somebody who seems like the right fit, wants to build their online profile and their credibility online, but is credentialed and is, you know, impressive and knowledgeable. So it can happen kind of a couple of different ways. But, you know, generally speaking, it's not a process of like, great, here's all of our web articles, please review them all. It's sort of more piecemeal, like, hey, we'd love your opinion on this. You're kind of the subject matter expert in this space. If you're willing, we'd love to, you know, kind of feature you on our site as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's super important in the space you're in, like the health and wellness space. I don't suppose it would work so well if you guys just had a, you know, an image from this person does not exist and it was a totally made up person who had no credentials or anything like that.
No, they're real experts. So that's pretty important. The other way that we hope to find them is through sort of broadcasting that we're looking for people, right? So we still, I mean, more doctors would be helpful, dentists, like fitness instructors or nutritionalists would be helpful, potentially veterinarians. Anybody else right now, Alex? And insurance. I would love people who are experts in insurance. Like, I have so many different sites I want to start or write more about, but like, insurance, I think, is going to be pretty interesting. So I'd love an insurance agent or an insurance broker or someone like that. So there's some pretty specific type people who've got some pretty amazing expertise that would be helpful to us. And so it's just kind of working through a network and letting the world know we're looking for help.
Particularly fire insurance, right?
In California, to be an expert, though. I just want to say one other thing is that when you're, I think a lot of struggle for a lot of folks who want to get into affiliate is picking the niche, right? Like figuring out what topic is going to be worth your time. Because if you choose wrong from the beginning, just like I did with bestjapanesewhiskey.com, then there's just nothing that you could possibly do right. It's just not going to work. But then once you get into affiliate marketing, what I'd say is that to Healy's point, like the opportunities abound. All of a sudden, you're starting to recognize, wow, there are so many different sites that I would like to create. So that's kind of like where Healy and I are. It's like there's just not enough time, but we understand the model and we understand where the opportunity lies. Really just looking for ways to kind of increase our bandwidth and awesome people to work with to potentially expand the footprint that into the areas that we want to go.
So yeah, I mean, how is that going to work for you guys? So you mentioned at the start of the call, you kind of alluding to it here, that you guys have the connections with the affiliate programs, and you've got this awesome network built up, and you've got the expertise because you've already done this several times. But you're looking for partners to help you expand that bandwidth, right? How does that work, or what does that look like? Like, what are you? Obviously, we know what you're bringing to the table, but what are you expecting the other side to bring to the table, and how is it all connected together?
Yeah, I think Healy mentioned it earlier as well, that affiliate marketing is not rocket science. So really, anyone can do it. It just takes a little bit of confidence, direction, and really just drive, stick-to-itiveness. So the way that this has worked in the past is just the same way that Healy and I used to joke around, wouldn't it be cool if we had like a dumb affiliate marketing site that made some money? I've made that joke. I've had that same level of conversation with other marketers in the past. And so once we figured out Fin versus Fin and the model, I've reapproached them and said, hey, remember when we used to joke? Well, that joke is kind of a reality now. And if you want in on it, we would love to partner with you, because I know that you're an awesome marketer and we've enjoyed working with each other in the past. And so, I guess it can work in a number of different ways, depending on somebody's bandwidth and, financial situation and all the rest. But, the way that it has worked for us so far is find someone who's really driven, really interested in affiliate marketing. We work together. We sort of bring the partnerships and the blueprint and some of the content resources and the expertise, and of course the confidence as well. Hey, if you do this, you will make money kind of thing. Cause that's a big question mark in most entrepreneurs, and especially in affiliate marketing, in their heads. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it's blossomed for us in the past. I think it could happen in a lot of different ways. I've heard of other people creating a more franchise, or I should say more mentorship model. So you kind of start out as sort of an intern, you cut your teeth, all of a sudden you're now getting paid a little bit, and all of a sudden now you're getting some equity in the business. So it can happen in a lot of different ways. The model that we've seen work really well is just, great, you start your own site, we will tell you what to do, we will share our knowledge and resources, and as in exchange for that, we are now part owners in your website and in all of its proceeds.
Yeah. And anybody who's interested in approaching that model with you guys, how's best for them to find out more about this? It sounds like an awesome opportunity. Do they have to apply for this? Are you vetting people? It seems like the dream to partner up with someone like you two. So how would people find out more about that?
If after this podcast we have a flood of applicants, we're definitely going to have to formalize our process a bit more. But I think as of right now, we're not in that position, and we'll sort of entertain a lot of conversations and try and find great people to work with. Obviously, that's the key. If you partner with someone bad, none of this works. So definitely some level of vetting, some level of feeling comfortable with them and their background. Absolutely. Yeah.
But you can reach us either through the Fin versus Fin contact us web form on the website, or I am on LinkedIn. There's not very many Healy Joneses on LinkedIn, so I'm pretty easy to find. So you can ping me there as well, and just make it clear why you're reaching out to me, because I do get a lot of people reaching out trying to sell me stuff. So it's not really what I'm interested in. But yes, and I think what we would look for is someone who's willing to do the work, right? So before we launch the sites that we have been successful with, we have written by ourselves maybe 5 or 10, 2, 3, 4,000 word articles, right? So it's We're actually going to write it. We're going to write it, and we're going to build the nav, and we're going to think about the kind of high level structure. We're going to sketch out the homepage. It's like, this is all the work we would want someone to do before we even kick something off. And I think there's a little bit of just sort of, you've got to prove that you're willing to put the work in, because it is, these are side hustles, right? And so You've got a day job, you might have a family or other obligations. Everybody would love to make a few hundred or a few thousand dollars extra month, but it takes work. It's not passive income. I don't know who started the myth of passive income. That was the one thing that I might not have been honest with Alex about, when I was like, oh, we only have to do any work. It'll just come in. Well, the money comes in, but it just still takes work.
I got sold. Yeah.
yeah, we'll put some links in the show notes anyway, so people can reach out and contact you if they're interested in that. What's the future? Not just for you guys, but for Finn versus Finn. Like, is there an exit strategy? Are you thinking about exit? Are you just thinking about continuing to grow? Will the site turn into something bigger, like a community or even a portal where these brands can push exclusive content? And what's the long term vision for Finn versus Finn?
I think the future is still bright for Finn versus Finn. We still think there's a lot of room to grow within the current model. I think there's still tons of direct to consumer health and wellness brands that we discover almost every day that are like, yep, that's a good one. We would love to partner with them. That could be a big company one day. So I think business as usual for the foreseeable future. One day, yeah, potentially selling the site. I think the multiples are good, and we're trying to do the best to keep everything clean so that one day, from an accounting perspective, one day we're in a good position to do that. But yeah, other than that, we have seen some kind of community-based, like, hey, more shoppable discovery experiences that are more like web apps or D2C brands rather than sort of review sites. My question always is, how do they get traffic without venture capital, kind of like paid traffic, venture capital fueled paid traffic? Because at the end of the day, if you still don't have people coming to your site, you can't, it's hard to make money. I don't know if we have like a grand product vision other than that, but there's the acquiring and expanding out of our portfolio and our sort of franchise of sites. That's a big initiative for us. Expanding into new categories. So always diversifying, where our income is coming from and who our partners are. There's also, just a fair amount of kind of new social channels and new sort of, Healy always makes fun of me as sort of pushing our business too much in an agency direction, but there are kind of new, there's always a new Clubhouse, TikTok, Snapchat type things that your partners want you to help them with. And so it doesn't necessarily mean, managing ad spend. It just means being creative with, kind of the marketing strategies that they're interested in pursuing, and potentially you find something there that's like its own business. So, I think that's a long-winded way of saying that we don't have like a really crystallized, vision for the future, but I think business as usual and expanding the number of sites, expanding the partners that we work with.
I don't know. I'm going to try to attack it in a different way. So I think I would love it if in 2 to 3 years we had half a dozen or a dozen folks who we're franchised with, where we own a meaningful percent of their sites, who are attacking specific niches that they were really passionate about, and where we were, like Alex and I were continuing to drive forward the connections with the affiliate marketers and finding the new companies and the new spaces to get into. Like, I just think we have recurring check-ins with the people we're partnered with now, and those conversations are really fun, and we're learning and discovering new things. And so I would love it to just be like a franchise network where there's a handful of really awesome, really dedicated people who are all experts in particular areas, and we're all kind of learning and growing together. I think there's something there.
I guess just taking that a step further, like the longer term plan could also be becoming almost like a boutique affiliate network yourself. Like, if you have all these great direct brand connections, mm-hmm. and you can negotiate all these deals, and then you've got your franchisee model. There's no reason why you then couldn't potentially, especially if you've helped form some of these affiliate programs, why you couldn't then take that to a wider audience.
We have actually helped a number of brands launch affiliate programs. Like, we will approach people and say, hey, we think you have an awesome product. You're probably going to write about it. We don't have an affiliate program that we can sell. Is there one, or can you start one? And some of them will say, at some point I'm going to have one, but I don't have one now. And others will say, I don't want to do that. And we very persistently keep knocking on the door, and eventually people are creating programs almost specifically for us. So Adam, that's a really smart idea.
Just on the technical front, if someone doesn't have an affiliate program, how are you helping them create that? Like, are you using software to, like, are you actually hands-on helping them set up the software, or are you just recommending, I would use this, and then?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of two ways to go. Like, one is to recommend them into a real piece of software or affiliate network, right? And then the other way to go is to do it in a much more lightweight basis where there's a coupon code or like UTM or something like that. And then we are behooving to them reporting to us accurately, but we tend to work with people who are pretty reputable. So we're totally trusting of them. And so those are kind of the two ways to go. And it depends a little bit on sort of how much of a lift those folks are willing to take and how much technical resources they have inside the organization to kind of go either way.
Yeah. And then I guess one of my last questions for you guys is just going back to what Alex said there about like these new channels and where brands probably want to get exposure. Have you guys ever thought of, or have you actually even created like brand specific content, not for an affiliate commission, but maybe like as almost an extension of their marketing team? So they want to push a campaign on TikTok. You have the audience. They'll help you create the media, and you know, you push it to your audience for maybe a fee rather than an affiliate commission.
Yeah, it's interesting. That would be definitely moving into more of the agency realm.
Yeah,
I think they can be structured in a lot of different ways. But one thing that we have done on quite a bit of is give brands access to advertise on our social media handles. So it's fairly easy to do through the Facebook Ad Manager, and all these companies have performance marketing teams. So instead of us running the ads on their behalf, it's more like, hey, great, now you have access to our handle. Please, you know, add the right disclosures to make sure that it's all above board. But other than that, you know, you can use our audiences, you can, use our social handles to advertise your product essentially. And for different brands, it works differently. I'd say as a retargeting strategy, it's pretty strong for most brands. You can think of the third-party validation as being important as one of the last kind of confidence boosters before someone crosses the line. Anyway, that is one strategy that we do pursue with brands, and different brands work with us on an evergreen basis.
When they have access to your Facebook manager there, do they have access to your pixel data as well?
You can specify what you give them access to. So, you know, not in every case. In most cases, no. Most of the time, it's just access to advertise on our handles, but not necessarily access to our audiences.
I saw something going back a couple of months back. There's actually a marketplace now where you can list your social media pixel data. I can't remember what it was called, but you can actually sell your pixel data to brands who want to retarget your audience.
There's something called Lumanu, which is a little different, but it's similar. It's just basically a marketplace where connecting brands to people, to publishers and social media accounts for this exact kind of thing. So it's very similar.
I tried to sell the pixel data from one of my sites actually when I saw this direct, but trying to explain and trying to figure out like a payment method, like how much they would pay, whether it was a flat fee or whether it was, you know, per impression on the site, or we just couldn't figure it out. But I thought that was a super kind of niche way of additional monetization, like selling your pixel data.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other monetization strategy that we've stayed away from, that I know a lot of affiliates go for, is just display ads and hooking into an Ezoic or something like that. Maybe when we're getting ready to sell the site, we plug that in and boost revenue. No, I'm just joking, but I think, I think there's SEO, headwinds potentially, that plugging in a tool like that will hurt your SEO.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I mean, is there anything else you guys want to cover off before we round it up for the day?
I just want to say that, although we've had more success building our own sites than buying them, it is more work, obviously, goes without saying. But we have loved working with you, Adam, and, niche website builders in general. And you guys have done a great job on some of the sites that we've bought and helping us maintain them, because we only have so much time and bandwidth, not just maintain, but, help them grow and actually become more profitable than when we first bought them. So, yeah, I think I just want to plug your service, because I think it's really fantastic and it's been great for us.
Yeah, it's really nice to have a steady drumbeat of high quality content that really helps a lot. And so we if anybody's going to do this, it's not passive income. You do have to keep investing in the content. So it's nice to have partners like you guys who can help us with that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we don't do these podcasts to advertise our services. I think there's more value there, but yeah, I really appreciate the kind words. It's great. we'll put some contact details in the show notes so people can get in touch, and hopefully now you have a massive influx of new partners that want to partner with you guys. I think it would be an awesome opportunity. But thanks for your time today, guys. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Adam.
Speak to you soon.
Yeah, Adam. Bye.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.